Okay, Ella, you can continue about your family's history.
Well, I think we will continue with the Hausauer side of the family where we left off the last time and finish that up. We left Henry Hausauer, my uncle, in New Richland, and then there were two other Hausauer boys, John and George, who lived in Ortonville, Minnesota, and then, of course, my father, Fred, who married Catherine Hausauer. And we lived in New Richland. And I am Ella Laudert Hansen. I married Burton Hansen of Odin, Minnesota. And we had one daughter, Gwendolyn, who died the year she graduated from high school. We left Uncle Henry Hausauer in New Richland, and John and George Hausauer moved to Ortonville, Minnesota, and lived there all their lifetime. And then there were three girls in that Hausauer family. Aunt Eliza, who married Max Klesick of Page, North Dakota, and Mary Hausauer, who married Harry Rental of Page, North Dakota, and then, of course, my father, who married Catherine Hausauer of New Richland. And I am Ella Laudert Hansen, and I married Burton Hansen of Odin, Minnesota, and we had one daughter, and she died the year we graduated from high school.
Was that 1940?
Yes, and now I think that clears up the Hausauer side of the family. Now we'll go to the Laudert family and bring Grandma Laudert home to Minnesota. Grandpa Laudert died in Germantown, Wisconsin, and then my grandmother decided to come to Minnesota along with the rest of the family. And she bought a little home out in the country north of New Richland, about a mile, and she lived there until her death. And there were, as I said, five boys in that family. There was Uncle Martin of New Richland, and Uncle Martin of New Richland, and Uncle George of Heartland, and Uncle Bill of Waseca, and Uncle Pete of Park Rapids, and he lived in Park Rapids, and of course my father married my mother, Catherine Hausauer, and they lived in New Richland.
And your father's name was Frederick.
Yes, and I told about our daughter and that I married her. Well, now we'll go to Grandma Laudert's family. There were 11 children in that Laudert family, 5 boys and 6 girls. There was my Uncle Martin, who lived in New Richland, and my Uncle George, who lived in Heartland, and my Uncle Bill, who lived in Waseca, and my Uncle Pete, who lived in Park Rapids, Minnesota, and of course my father, who lived in New Richland and married Catherine Laudert.
Catherine
Hausauer. And did I say that my name was Ella Laudert Hansen and I married Burton Hansen of Odin, Minnesota? Well, now we'll go to the Laudert side of the family. And there was my grandfather's name was Daniel and my grandmother's name was Susanna. And they had these 5 boys who I mentioned. and they hatched 6 girls. There was Eva, who married Jake Hausauer. Not Jake Hausauer, but Jake Luff of Big Stone, Minnesota. And then there was Aunt Lisetta, who married Joe Young of Waseca. And Aunt Lena, who married Fred Mathis of Wells. And Aunt Elizabeth, who married Mr. Buck of Waseca. And Aunt Mary, who married Andrew Bryline of New Richland. And Aunt Caroline, who married August Peterson of New Richland. And I think that is as far as we'll go with the two families as of now. And they were all good, hard-working people, and I knew all of them, and I loved all of them, and I think that is all now as far as I can recall. Can you think of anything that I left out of that? Any questions? I got all the brothers and sisters of my father.
How about your family? You said there were seven children in your family?
Yes, Catherine and Fred Laudert had 7 children. My oldest brother's name was Henry. My next brother's name was Walter. And there was Harold. And there were 4 girls. My older sister, Ida, who married Herbert Rutherford, she didn't marry Herbert Rutherford. She married and lived in North Dakota. And then there was my sister, Catherine, who married and lived in New Richland. And my sister, Cora, who married and lived in New Richland. And then I had 1 sister, Leela, who died in infancy. And I think that is all of the, that I can think of the family history. I think that pretty well covers it. Can you think of anything I left out?
I had a question from last time, Noah. You mentioned Michael Hausauer.
Michael Hausauer, that was my grandfather on the Hausauer side. Michael Hausauer, and this other Michael Hausauer that died in the war.
That was what I was.
That was from his first marriage.
And was that, I wanted to know if you had ever heard at what state he entered service. You know, they came from.
Well, I don't know, but I imagine he entered service in, in Ohio.
Ohio.
Because that's where they settled when they first came. And then went by wagon team over to Minnesota.
I kind of thought that might have been
yes, that was it.
And he
died in the service.
And the first names of your mother's parents, now maybe.
My mother's parents' name were Michael and Margaret. And my father's parents' names were Susanna and Daniel.
Those are the only questions that I had from last time. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's as far as we can go into the history, because you can't go any farther into that history. That takes care of the immediate families, and I think that's because if you start going into the other part of it, that's a long deal.
And after you married Burton Hansen, you said you went to live in Davenport?
Yes, he went to college there in Davenport.
And then after college, where did you go?
Then we moved to Waterville, Minnesota. And then after that, from Waterville, we moved out to Canby, Minnesota. And then is when we came back and went and lived in Waterville, and my husband decided that he wanted to take all woodworking, and ham radio were his specialty. That was his amusement. That's what he loved. And then he decided that he would go into the factory. At that time, there were two woodworking factories in Waterville, Minnesota. One they called the Big Factory and one the Little Factory. And in the Big Factory, they made all this, if you remember, all this heavy mission furniture, like you used to have the library tables and chairs to match. The one factory made those, and the other made the small items of furniture.
What would those be?
In the small factory. Well, that would be like, let me see now. Well, cabinet work, you know, small pieces of furniture, like fancy furniture, you know.
Like a knick-knack shelf?
Yes, that's right, and small pieces of furniture.
What was the name of the owner of that factory, do you know?
Bill Hayes was the manager, and I think he was the owner of both.
Did it have any other names than the Big and Little Factory?
That's what they always called it, the Big and Little Factory of Waterville. As far as to my knowledge.
And your husband was a cabinet maker? He helped?
He went in there to learn the cabinet making business. And he started in the paint shop, as they called it, where they did the finishing. They had to start there first to know how to create furniture. They learned that first. That was the first step, to create furniture, because they shipped a lot of furniture. That was really an up-and-going business at that time. And he had to start in the creating room, learn how to create the furniture, and then he had to go in the paint shop and learn how to do all this finishing. And then he could go into the cabinet work. And then he started to work in the cabinet shop and make this furniture.
About what year was that?
Gwendolyn was about a year old, about in 41 or 42.
Or was it in the 30s?
No, in the 40s.
When was Gwendolyn born?
She was born in March era, in 1940. And so it was a year after, she was about a year and a half, 2 years old, so that was about in 41. That time.
And then, how long did you live in Waterville?
Oh, I don't just quite recall how many years. We lived there several years, and then we attended the super made aluminum ware, a cooking ware, and we attended that. And they had a high-powered salesman selling that. And he talked my husband into going into the sales business and going on the road, which they did, selling this super-made aluminum ware. And our work then, now this is another phase of my life, our work then was to go and call on these people. We'd have these dinners, and we had to serve and cook these dinners. And we had to serve these people. These parties would be at the homes of people. They would give the party and invite the guests, about 20 people. And then we went in there and did the cooking. But of course, I did all the work, but mine didn't show. Burton did the cooking. See, it had to look easy. And so we went on the road then, and I never said no to my husband. When he wanted to try anything new, I said, all right, we'll try that. I never wanted it, said, well, now that was a thing we should have done. So we went, and we worked at that for quite some time. Then what we had to do would serve a complete meal. It was called, see, that was waterless cooking, that super made. And you had to cook without water. And you roasted your meat. You had a big roaster that you roasted your meat and dry roasted it, browned it, and then roasted it. And it drawed it and cooked in its own juices. And the same way with the vegetables, the potatoes and the carrots, and what else did we serve? But anyway, that was all cooked in this super aluminum ware without. But I had to prepare all this food and get it ready while he went on the road the next day contacting these guests and trying to sell them this aluminum cookware. And it's marvelous stuff. I cooked with it all my life after that. Yes. And so, but of course, and he baked a cake. They had a double, one of these double pans that had a cover on it. It was the same on both sides. And he stirred up the cake out there and put that cake in that pan. He baked it so many minutes on one side and then turn it over and bake it on the other side. And it would bake in that aluminum frying pan. It was one of these, oh dear. One of these two-part things, you know, oblong and narrow. And he baked the cake there to make it all look easy and simple. But then while he was gone then, in the daytime, selling, contacting these guests, then I had to go to town and shop and buy all this food and prepare it as far as I could, that is the carrots and the potatoes and all that, ready for cooking. So I was doing all that hard work at home and had this little five-year-old daughter to take care of. And she just loved it. She loved people like we did. And we had no place to leave her, so we just took her along. And we worked at that for quite some time. And then it just kind of got a little too much. And we decided we'd better quit. It was getting too, you know how it is when you're, she was running among them, and she was a smart little cookie. And people, you know, they get spoiled. People question them, and so we said, "Oh, this is just no life for little Gwendolyn to be leading." So then we went out of that, and then when we came back, my husband worked about that time in Montgomery Ward. We lived in Faribault then, and they started, the Montgomery Ward store built a store there. They had none in Faribault before, and they had a big furniture department on the top floor, and my husband went there and asked, they were advertising for somebody to manage that furniture store. Of course, he had his sales experience, which he had to learn. And then he had all this experience with the making of furniture and creating and everything. So he applied for the managementship of that Montgomery Ward shop, which included the whole top floor of that store, which is still there in Faribault on the corner. And so we did that work, and we were there for 5 years, and he managed that store. And then my sister and her husband lived in Waseca, and Mr. Paff then had the hardware store and the mortuary in Waseca. And he said to my brother-in-law, he said, "Would you know of a good man that I could get to work in the furniture store for me? I need a good man." He says, "Yes, I do know of a good man. I don't know whether," and my sister and brother-in-law lived in Waseca. And so he went over to my brother-in-law, told him, and he went over and saw Mr. Paff. And of course, I was anxious to go to Waseca because I was closer to home and my sister lived there. So he worked for Mr. Paff in the furniture store for a good many years. But he had it understood that he would not do any mortuary work because that was not his business. But he said, "No, his son did that." But he said, "I won't help with it." But he managed the store and run the furniture department and that. And then He always still couldn't get away from his love for woodworking. And then Mr. Johnson, a son, the father of the Johnson boys that had the radio factory in Waseca, he had a woodworking shop in Waseca. And he got to be quite old, and he was diabetic, and he just couldn't handle it anymore. So he had the shop up for sale, the store and the shop. And someone told Burton about it, and he just couldn't get down there fast enough to see Mr. Johnson, because that's just what he loved to do, was that furniture work, you know, and building. So he went down, and in the meantime, I didn't go back to the Historical Society. I worked there until fall, till snow, and then it was cold, and I couldn't work there no longer because it wasn't heated. So then my friends who lived next door to us were people that sold ready-made. They were from Iowa, and they lived up and lived right next door to us, and they had a truck, and they went around to all these larger small towns, a radius of at least 100 miles around Waseca. They'd leave Monday morning and come back on Saturday night, and from the selling. And then they said, one day they said to me, they said, "Ella, you know, we would like to start up a style shop in Waseca if you would run it for us." I said, "Oh no, I don't think so. I don't think I want to do that." Well, anyway, they talked me into it. So Burton said, "Well, why don't you?" He said, he talked to Mr. Johnson. Then in the meantime, we bought that furniture, woodworking. Well, he told Mr. Johnson he would buy it if he would stay with him. He said, "I know how to build the cupboards and all the furniture and stuff, but I do know nothing about storm windows or screens," which was a big business there. He says, "If you'll stay with me a few years till I learn all the things that are to learn that I don't know about the hardware store." Well, Mr. Johnson said, "If I have help, I think I can." Well, then, of course, that left me free. So they started up. I said, "Well, Burton would have no objection." He says, "No," he says, "go ahead, Topsy, try your luck at it." So they went, and Burton went to work and built all the counter furniture, the counters and all the mirrors and all the booths and that for this store that they started. And they stocked it, and we bought nothing but the very best lines of women's ready-to-wear. And we had a hat shop. So I run that store, style shop, for the Jameses for 6 years.
And it was called the Style Shop?
The Style Shop, yes.
And what James, what was his first name?
Art. They call him Arthur was his name.
Where was that located?
That was, it isn't in Waseca anymore. It has closed in the last year or two. I don't know why, but it was sold. And after I quit there, then one of the girls that had been working for me, I had 3 and 4 girls working for me in that Style Shop. And so then I, let's see now, where did I wind up there? Well, anyway, they put that style shop in, and I run that for 6 years. Well, then Mr. Johnson had this bad leg, and he got gangrene in it and had to have his leg amputated at the hip. So he says, "Well, Bert, I can't stay with you any longer now." And so then we bought the other half of the hardware store and woodworking shop. And then that left Burton alone in the shop, you see, to take care of the hardware side of it. So then he said, "Well, I'm just going to have your help. I can't neglect either one place or the other." And so I said, "Well, all right, you come first." So I quit the James shop, and the girl that had worked for me for several years took it over then. Then after that, it changed hands several times. But Mr. Johnson lived for quite a few years after that without his leg. But then when I went in there, I always liked Pyrex ware, so I put in a good line of Pyrex ware to sell in the hardware store, and then we put in the best tools made, Escalduna, hand tools. We put in a line of those to sell. And then it wasn't long because the people remember Burton from the Path Furniture Store, and they liked his linoleum laying and the work he did. So they talked us into putting in a line of linoleum, too. So I went in that hardware store, and I had to learn the hardware business. I didn't hardly know a screw from a bolt in those days. And there were hundreds of them in these boxes, all sizes, you know. But I got so good at it, if somebody came in and said, "You got any screws like this?" I could go right to the box and pick them out, you know. And I loved it. I just loved that work.
Where was that store located?
It was located on the side street, right down from where the Penny store is now. But it was sold then afterwards, when my husband got ill then, and we had to sell it. And then it was sold, and they bought it and put that liquor store in it. It was all remodeled then and had that liquor store put in, so there is no more of that. But I enjoyed that work in the hardware store and helping my husband, and it was nice meeting the people. So that's another phase of my life.
I guess I'd like you to start with telling us how you got involved with the Historical Society. You mentioned that last time I was here.
With the Historical Society.
Mm-hmm. As you said, you worked there for a number of years after the old museum.
And I have to stop and think. That's back to my other train of thought. Well, the Historical Society, I just got started in that. It was there when this building, I tell you, the Johnson boys that were the sons, the boys in the radio factory, they bought, the Methodists built a new church right across the street from my home where we built our house. And they started that Historical Society building. They bought it and gave it to the Historical Society. And that's where I got interested in the Historical Society.
Now, did you work in the Methodist Church, or did you work in the little building behind the courthouse?
The little building behind the courthouse is where I worked when it was still there.
And how did you get involved? Who asked you initially?
Oh, well, there were three men. They came to see me the night after our daughter's funeral. And one of them, you've heard of him, I know if you've lived around here any time, was Herman Peterson. And Herman Pandrum used to be superintendent of country schools years ago. And I used to remember when he'd come by horse and buggy to visit these country schools and stay overnight. And, oh, we just loved it when Mr. Pandrum stayed overnight. They had interesting things to listen to, and of course I was all for that. And then Mr. Coughlin, who had the other newspaper in Waseca at that time, it was the Herald. And those three men came down to see me second day after Gwendolyn's funeral, and said, "Ella, we need somebody in that historical building to take care of it, and we think you would be just the one to put in there." I said, "Oh no," I said, "I got to stay here and help Bert." And they said, "Well, we would sure like to have you in there. There isn't anybody that knows the people around here like you do in the county and all over. We would like to," and I said, "Oh, I don't know," and they argued and talked, and finally they went out. Finally my husband said, "Well, why don't you, Topsy, why don't you do that?" And I said, "Well, it sounds interesting, but then that leaves you without anybody." And he said, "Well, I'll get along somehow." And so I started my work with the Historical Society.
And what did you do?
I was in that little building down there. Well, for 4 days out of the week, I had to take my car and go through the county and interview all these old timers and get their history and make notes of it, get pictures and whatever they might have to offer for that. And then I'd have to do the write-ups on all these people through the county. And then they said, you have to type up the... Then I said, that lets me out because I can't type. I thought it was all of it. Then my husband spoke and he typed. He said, don't let that stop you, Topsy dear, if you want to do that. I'll do your typing for you. At night you take your notes. So I couldn't get out of that. So I took the job at the Historical Society and just was in that building 4 days, or in the county, all through the county, and interviewed all these old-time people. And there was only one place of all the places I visited through the county, and I also visited the older people in the city of Waseca, too. They gave me one of the child's history books that I could have to look up these older people so I would know where to go, you see. And so, now I forgot where I was at. Well, anyway, then Burton would type these cards for me at night, and on Saturday then I would have to stay in the building and do my book work and get that all down, you know, and then to be there in case people came to visit or bring things. And so there I was in that store. I'd go down on Saturday morning. And my first trip was, of course, that building wasn't tight, you know. It was just like it is now, I suppose. It's still with the chinks out of the plaster and stuff. And the mice would get in. Well, I had mice traps sitting all around the place. And I never in my life could take a mouse out of a mouse trap. I always had to leave that if we had one at home, and Burton had to do it. Well, I couldn't ask my husband to come down there every morning and take the mice out of the trap. So I thought, well, here goes. I do or die, I'm going to take those mice out. And I'd make the rounds with my mouse traps, take my mice out of them and lay them on the floor by the door and then dispose of them. And then my next deal after the mice, then I would get back to my work.
Did you have lots of visitors? Did a lot of people come?
Quite a few, yes. And that was the story of the mice, anyway, and my fun with that. But I got so I could take them out without shuddering too much. And then the jail, you see, it was on the ground of the jail, and the jail came right up to the building in the yard there, in the back of it. And then one morning, Happy Lowe, the sheriff, came over to the door and he says, Ella, do you keep your door locked? And I said, no, I don't. Well, he said, I wish you would. Because he says, I've got a couple of prisoners over there that are bad actors, bad characters. And he said, they're not beyond doing anything. And he said, you better have, well, I said, if I shut that door and lock it, I've got to have some air. I've got to have my screen door open. Well, he says, when I get back, well, I said, and you get back to the shower. Well, he said, do it right away because they're working out in the yard today and I don't trust them. So I said, well, you call my husband when you get back and tell him to bring a hook and eye down and put it on the screen door so I can fasten that and give me some little chance of. So that was quite an exciting thing, too, you know, seeing those prisoners out there and telling me they were rough characters. But they never gave me any trouble, although they would come work way over by the windows and look in. Perhaps if they'd have thought there was a chance, they might have thought of, not that they would do me any harm, but a chance of making a getaway, don't you see? But I never was bothered by them. So that was another interesting phase of that.
And did people donate objects?
Yes, they did. They brought them down there, then I'd have to label them and put them on display. And then, of course, winter set in, then I couldn't, that building was so cold, we couldn't be in it in the wintertime. So they locked it up then in the winter times when the cold weather came. But then, in the meantime, then they decided to move it out to the fairgrounds where it is now, and have it on display out there so that people
could. That was the log cabin.
Yes, the log cabin that is out there. But that's the building I worked in when it was the Historical Society building on that lot down behind the jail. Of course, that yard has all changed now and everything. It's not like it used to be. But that was some of my experience in there.
You mentioned before the house that you lived in down near the Methodist Church in Waseca.
Yes.
And you had that house built.
Yes, we built that house.
And was your contractor Eric Schostrand?
That's right.
Could you tell a little bit about having that house built and working with him?
Yes. Now, you see, at that time, Eric didn't do any house building anymore. He was from Sweden. He was the carpenter and builder. And his brother, Mr. Schostrand, was a painter from the old country. And those two brothers, they had a paint shop downtown. And Eric did nothing anymore then. He didn't build houses anymore. All he built was churches. And he built some 52 or 3 churches around in Waseca County in those years. And so when we got started, and I designed my own home. And Burton says, well, it's going to be up to you, Tuff. You're going to build a house. I haven't got time. Somebody's going to have to pay for that, and I got to work. So he said, you go ahead, you know what you want, and you design it. And he says, well, by the way, he said one day, who are you going to have build your house? And I said, well, who else but Eric Schostrand? He says, Eric won't bother with a little thing like that, and like a house anymore. He said, he's building churches now. I said, you leave Eric to me. Well, it wasn't long. A couple of days after that, Eric came in for something. And then I told him, I said, Eric, how about it? We are going to build a house, and I have designed it, and I would like you to build it. Would you do it? And he always chewed a cigar, but it was never lit. And he'd chew that cigar, and then he'd talk, and he talked real broken. And Vanessa Hansen, I would just love to build a house for you. My husband, I didn't dare look at him because I wanted to laugh so bad. He got his, and I said, now I got all my figures in my head. I can't read a blueprint, which I couldn't. But I said, I know what I want and how I want it, and I've got all the figures, measurements and everything, and I'll give them to you. He says, can you do it now? I said, yes, I can. He got out a sheet of paper and he started drawing as I was talking and telling. And do you know that he only had to make, when he got through with that drawing that he roughly drew there, that blueprint, he only had to make 2 corrections. He got it as I was talking and telling him all the measures. And then I said to him, I heard my husband complain so much about people, these carpenters that didn't build houses. You couldn't lay a linoleum in them because it wasn't square. No, he said, I guess squares and compasses are all out of style. I said, well, now, Eric, your men all have squares and compasses, don't they? He says, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. And I says, I want them to use them. Now, I said, my measurements, some of them are inches and feet. And I said, if I find one of those corners out a half an inch, so help me, you're going to rebuild it. I said, you tell your men, they better have their rules, and their yardsticks. I said, when I come to laying carpeting and linoleum in that place, I want those rooms to be square. And I did. They were square, and everything was fine.
And did your husband build the cabinets?
Yes, he did all of that building. Mm-hmm. And even made handmade black walnut furniture for me. The whole thing. Out of lumber that he and Mr. Johnson went out in the woods and cut the walnut trees, every fall they would go out, that was when Mr. Johnson was still there, and they'd pick out the black walnut trees they wanted from the woods and then chop them down and saw them up and bring them in, and they had to be aged for 7 years before they were usable. And then they'd had it sawed into lumber and brought in and stored upstairs over the shop part of it to dry kill. They had to put cleats between every board so that they would dry. And that's what he took some of that walnut that he helped chop the trees out and aged in there and built me this beautiful. I said, well, now I want you to make me some furniture when we get in there. I said, well, what do you want? He said, I said, I want a nice coffee table and 2 round lamp table and a china closet or bookcase. And he said, well, now how do you want? I had it all designed how I wanted it. Had it all in my head, and he got that out too. And so he built all that black walnut. And I had a long coffee table, and I had a fancy edge on it, you know, scroll edge on it. And then I had the two round tables that I had for lamp tables, because my living room was 30 some odd feet long, 32 or 33 feet long. And I wanted those, and I had a big Davenport that I bought, a 2-piece Davenport, a great big long one. And I wanted one of those 30-inch round coffee tables at each end with the lamps on them and with the plate glass. Of course, we sold plate glass too. So I could have all the plate glass I wanted, and he put the plate glass on those coffee tables and that, and then the Davenport. And then I had mirrors on the wall. I was a great hand for mirrors, and I had all those big windows, you know, that house. And I had big plate glass mirrors, one as long as the, almost, not quite as long as the Davenport, that big Davenport, on the south wall, so I could get the reflection of the trees and the lake and the out of doors through those windows into the mirror and have, just like if I was sitting outside looking at it in the living room when you were facing that way. And I had 2 swivel chairs that I had by in front of my window so I could look out the windows and swing around and look at my scenery in the mirrors if I wanted. And then on the west wall in the dining room part of it, I had another big 30-inch mirror on that wall as long as my Davenport, or as long as my buffet. And that was new at that time when we bought it up in the wholesale house in the cities. And they called it Dusty Oak, and it was a big credenza buffet. And then I had this big refectory top table that pulled out to 6 feet and longer. And then I had these big heavy chairs with springs in them. Then I made needlepoint for all of those seats of all of those chairs. And I needled, then I got run out of needle, and I loved to make the needlepoint. And I run out of things to make needlepoint. So I went and I bought, when I went up to Dayton's, I got a cover for my piano bench, and I needlepointed that with a big design in it. Someday I'll show you the picture. I gave that when we sold our home, and I had to have auction and come down here. Then I took that needlepoint. I didn't take it off of the chairs. I left it on the chairs. But I did take the needlepoint off of the piano bench, and Burton had fixed it so someday if we ever sold the piano that I could take it off. He put it on a wooden frame that fit down on the top of the piano bench and fastened it with screws from underneath that didn't go through that board, so that needlepoint was all on that. I gave that to my nephew. I said, you take that off, Kenny, and take it home. And he's got it on the wall and his living room, and along with some other things of mine, these old things, and he just loved it. So, but my dining room set bought a real good price, even, you know, because at that, then these credenza buffets and these oak refectory top tables, these big ones, were coming back into style again. So there was no trouble about selling that.
What was the address of your house? I should probably... What street did you live on?
816 4th Avenue Northeast. And I lived right across from the Methodist Church. But as I say, I was a Methodist part of the time too, because in the wintertime I had trouble after Burton was gone to make that driveway in the wintertime when I couldn't walk, you see. That was the trouble. And if I couldn't make the driveway, then I couldn't get up that incline of the driveway. So I would walk over. I could walk that far. And so in the wintertime, I was a Methodist.
Otherwise, what church did you go to?
Well, I went to both of them, and I helped contribute to the Methodist, but I belonged to the... I never took membership out in the... But they figured I was a member, and they always had me over there for their meetings and things. But it was nice to be able to go there to church in the wintertime. And it was... that church is very similar to the Congregational, very little difference in it. And so in the wintertime, I was a Methodist, and in the summertime. And then I said to them, oh, that church is so beautiful with that... And they hardly ever had the light lit in the window in the front. It was stained glass, that upper window in that church. And it looked so beautiful. And I said to the minister one time, I said, oh, I wish you would put that, leave that light on at night. That church is so beautiful to see that. Otherwise, it's just dark there and with that beautiful. Well, he says, it means that we'd have to have somebody come every night and turn those lights out. And they just didn't feel it. Well, I said, I tell you what I'll do. I'll buy you a spotlight that you can put up on top of the roof of the deck. And put that spotlight on that you can turn it on and off or have it, fixed so that it'll go off and on by itself. And I said, you've got a couple of good electricians over here, they can install it. So I gave them the money to buy the spotlight with, so they could put it on that window at night. And then when they'd have ladies' aid, I'd go over and help with that. And then, let's see, that was my experience there. And then, oh yes, then I got started in the with the Bloodmobile. And I worked Bloodmobile for 22 years, 4 days each time. They were there 2 days, and I worked 2 days each time. So that was 4 days I would work Bloodmobile. And they put me on registration for my gift of gab, I guess. But not only for that, but because I knew the people. And that makes such a difference, you know, when you have, when you come in, and you'd be surprised how many people were scared to death of that blood thing. But I couldn't give blood. They wouldn't take it on account of my heart, you see. So I said, well, it won't hurt me for work. I can work 2 days every week. So I went down there and I worked 2 days. 2 days the Bloodmobile was in Waseca, and 2 days I worked 2 days, and I worked both days each time and on registration. And, you know, I could call most of the people by name when they came in and put them a little bit at their ease, but still there was a lot of them passed out. And the funny thing of it was the men passed out more than the women did. There was more men laying around that would pass out the women. Another was Franklin Stone. He was worked in Washington for a good many years, Washington, D.C. He was an attorney. And I knew him real well. His mother and I were real good friends, and they were Methodists. And he'd come to Bloodmobile every time and want to give blood, you know. He'd say to me, Ella, I don't know what's the matter with me. I'm just scared to death now. He said, I know I'll faint. I said, don't think you're going to faint. I said, you ain't going to faint, my gracious Frank. You're a little baby. But just as sure as shooting, my Mr. Frank would pass out every time. And he said, I can't help myself. But there were a lot of people. But as I say, the men would pass out more often than the women. I said, boy, if they ever had to have a baby or two, there wouldn't be many babies in the world. They couldn't take the blood. But I enjoyed every minute of that working for the Bloodmobile. And I only missed one meeting one time, and that was when my husband was so ill and I wouldn't go and leave him. And that's the only time in almost 22 years that I missed a meeting.
Who were some of the people you worked with? Was the Red Cross Bloodmobile? Who were some of the other people?
The doctors, mostly all of the doctors in Reseca, took their turn at it. You know, they'd come down at different hours. And there was all of them that were in town at that time, they'd take different hours and work there. There was Dr. Owles and the eye doctor. Well, that makes me so angry. I know them so well. We were such good friends.
Is Dr. Swenson involved?
Yes. They all the doctors took their turns at working, to put them through and see if they would pass the examination and take the blood test and that. But it was interesting work, and I loved every bit of it.
And you also mentioned that you square danced. Did you belong to a square dance club?
Yes, we belonged to a square dance club. And we square danced in the high school building in the... what was the building we square danced in? Well, anyway, it was the room downstairs. Oh, the gym. We danced in the gym. And I don't know if they're still living in Otama, but they left Reseca then. And he was the the lawyer there in Reseca. Then they moved to Owatonna, and he called our square dancing. Isn't it funny how you can be good friends with me, and you don't think of those people, and you kind of forget. But we had lots of fun in that square dance club.
Do you remember how long ago? It was some time ago. Was it in the 50s? 1950s? Or when was the club organized?
Well, it was... No, it was later than that. As you see, Gwendolyn died in 1940, and it was long after that the square dance started up there. But we had lots of fun in that square dance club. So I've just done about everything.
Well, we've covered a lot of it in these last 2 hours. Is there anything else that you want to mention before we end?
Not that I can think of right now. I think I'll probably later on think of something. But anyway, I've given a lot of things now.
Well, thank you.
And I feel good about it that I was able to do that for the public, that it'll be on record and that people can enjoy those things, and then all those things in that showcase down there that I have given, and that wagon deal was something. He actually stole that wagon. I was so angry. But you know, it cost me $15 to get that wagon back. Of course, I had to pay attorney's fees then, you see. He had to, and it was his fault that it got sold in the first place. Woman that sold it, that sold my home, she was a land agent, you see. She was the one that sold my home. And then contractor that was working there, the one that sold it, he bought my home. And then he gave that woman that wagon. I suppose he sold it to her. And it was a beautiful wagon. My father gave it to my daughter when she was on her birth, because she was his nurse when she was a little kid, you know. He just loved to have her wait on him because he was sick for 6 years. And so he bought that wagon for her. And I wanted to give it to the Historical Society. And I had a note in the wagon. Well, you know what the wagon looks like. That I wanted that to go to the Historical Society. And Annette Anderson, the girl that took care of me and her husband, she was over there, and you've seen her a long time. And I told Annette about it. Now, I said, be sure and see that when they come down to get these things, that you give them my wagon. And she went downstairs, and the wagon wasn't there. It was gone. And she got all excited. Well, she came and she said, oh, that wagon isn't there. And I said, well, that's funny. Well, it was gone, she said. So I got right on the telephone. Kenneth came down. I said, say, you get out there and you get Bill Patton on the telephone, my attorney. And I got Bill, and I said, what do you mean by selling that wagon of mine? Oh, he said, I didn't sell it. What was that land agent? Well, she was the woman, and he was the one that bought my house. He was a builder, too, after fashion. Well, anyway, he said, well, I sold it to her. He said, she wanted it so bad, so I told her she could have it. And I thought she wouldn't, I thought she wouldn't mind. And I said, she said, he paid $20 for it. And I thought that was, I said, Bill, that wouldn't buy the wheels on that wagon nowadays. I said, you get that wagon back. Well, he says, I don't know what I can do about it. I said, say, listen here, McKenneth. I said, Kenneth, you talk. He said, no, and I'll, you talk to him. So I did, and I talked. I bet they heard me all over the building, but I was so angry. I said, well, now listen here, Bill. I said, you're an attorney. You know what to do. You know how to get that wagon, and I'm telling you, you get that wagon back. But you know, he was 2 months getting that wagon back. She didn't want to give it up, see?
People really enjoyed it.
I knew they would, because Gwendolyn enjoyed it, but you know, that was, you can't find a wagon like that now. And she thought so much of that wagon, she would never even take it outside. She'd make her bed in it and lay in it. Put her dolls to sleep in it, and I'd say to her sometimes, Gwendolyn, why don't you take your wagon out and use it outside? Oh, Mama, it'll get dirty if I take it outside. No, I'm going to leave that.